claim that it doesn't really matter who they play, and it doesn't really matter where they play. They will expect to win and have most of the matchup advantages, most of the schematic advantages, talent advantages against anybody except the, you know, the other two or three teams in the country. And I'm talking Kansas, Alabama, setting everything off the court at Alabama to one side.
Yeah, we're talking about basketball. That's fair.
You know,
who else is in that group?
Yeah, I mean, it's. I mean, Purdue's not.
I don't think so.
Arizona has taken too many lumps. As good as we know they can look.
UCLA?
For me to believe that they're in there. UCLA pushing the cusp of that.
They're ranked fourth, right?
But some of the teams that we would have expected to be there, Tennessee, even before Zakai Ziegler's injury, no.
They can't score.
You know, a team like Gonzaga, okay, the muscle memory is there, but they're not what they've been from a talent perspective in the, you know, vintage last couple years. So my point is, there is an extent to which we're talking about Indiana, but we could overlay a lot of this on other teams. Arizona, like I said, has taken some lumps. Even Kansas got beat by double digits at home by TCU.
But they're outright Big 12.
Oh, I get it. I'm not arguing yeah. that.
Houston,
you know,
Houston's in there. We got to put Houston in there.
Virginia lost to Boston College.
Yeah.
And not close. And they didn't get beat on a buzzer beater. Like, they got played off the floor by a bad ACC team. So my point is, there's a lot of teams out there that I feel like if we just overlaid this show onto, you know, talking about them, we'd be having similar conversations and we'd be saying, boy, I think at their best they could be a Final Four team, but I've got this set of results over here that says, I'm not so sure. And it feels like one of those years more so than the average where we just, everybody just needs to get to March. Like, everybody needs
you told me that last night, and I agreed with you.
Needs to stop having to beat up on each other. The conference tournaments are a little different. It's a neutral setting. It's, you know, it's the pressure, it's the lack of pressure, especially for a team like Indiana, of, well, a win is great and a loss just means we get a couple extra days off. It's, you know, if you win, there's no time to for it to fester. You got to move on to the next day, et cetera, et cetera. And at the end of the weekend, everybody's going to have the party of Selection Sunday anyway. But then you need to go. Like, I think everybody just needs to get to the tournament.
I'll make your point for you for Big Ten fans. In the last four league games, Tuesday night and Wednesday night, three road teams won. And we've gone through the records of the teams at home, Indiana being included in this. Nobody's winning on the road. But right to your point, everybody's either desperate or all hell's breaking loose. Well, Penn State's got to win. Well, they did. They won at Northwestern last night. All of a sudden, Northwestern's double bye is on the ropes. Maryland had to go
Indiana's, to Indiana wasn't supposed to have the double bye in
now
its
back
hands
in it.
If it lost to Iowa. Now there are as many or more scenarios, assuming Indiana beats Michigan, that put Indiana in the double bye situation than
because
not.
Because Maryland lost at Ohio
because
State.
Maryland can't win on the road. Northwestern has suddenly lost three straight.
Well, Ohio
Rutgers is falling apart. You know, Illinois.
Michigan State wins in Nebraska.
Yeah, Illinois is. I'm not sure what Illinois is doing.
Did you see there? Epps is just out of the hospital with concussion, and Matthew Mayer, he drank too many energy drinks and had a caffeine episode.
Yeah, I mean,
what's going on? Yeah, so let's get all organized. Let's group it back up.
Yeah,
and figure out. Well, so Indiana.
That doesn't stop the fact that you should be concerned if you're an Indiana fan about Tuesday.
There you go. And Tuesday night was disappointing on multiple levels. And I talked about this with Novak a couple times this week. Unless you're paying a lot of attention like we do, Indiana was out-rebounded by 32 in two games against Purdue that they won. And that just doesn't happen very often, let alone two games. They're minus 16 in both those games, right? I'm not losing my marbles here. I'm pretty sure that was it. Or if not, it's right in the ballpark. But again, to get out-rebounded by Iowa, to not be able to score against one of the notoriously poorest defenses anywhere, those are the couple things. And the simple fact is, everybody got back Saturday night and had too much fun, right? That's just the easy way to put a cherry on all of this. But we don't know that happened. But it was you took all the goodwill on Saturday and all that great performance, and none of it, not even pieces of it, showed up on Tuesday.
It's okay
That's
to have
part.
The emotional letdown in December or January. You had the emotional letdown, for example, of Purdue last year to go into Michigan. Well, that's in mid-January. You're still not a fully formed team. You had the emotional letdown maybe a little bit this year of beating North Carolina in a big game at home and then going to Rutgers and just struggling. But that's December. It's okay not to be fully formed in December. It shouldn't be happening in March. And I think that while you can sit there and say, hey, that was the emotional letdown of one of the biggest road wins this program has, you know, had, not counting you know, Michigan in 2013 when they were biggest sort of non-conference championship implication road wins this program's had in 30 years. It was impressive, yes. It was a great game, yes. Game plan, adjustments, individual performances, collective performances, you know, the five-man, I don't know, the five-way connectivity between all five players on the floor at any given time, even when guys on the bench, I have even thought a guy that's maybe struggled a little bit, like Tamar Bates, gave you minutes where he helped. You know, Malik Renew was in and out with foul trouble at times, and I think he only scored 2 points, but he still gave you minutes. He gave you stretches where he helped.
He gave you a putback too.
So if you come
after they scored,
So if you come back home and you have a letdown, that's fine to a point, but not in March, not at the end of February. And if you're an Indiana fan, you say, well, okay, why do you need to get this out of your system now versus what's going to stop this from happening if you get to the second weekend, you beat, I don't know, number one seed Kansas, and then it's like, oh my God, Indiana's 40 minutes away from the Elite Eight. We just beat Kansas. What's going to stop it from happening again? I think that's what Indiana fans fairly are wondering.
Let's put numbers on it for easier digestion. What's their last 6-game streak? Do you know off the top of your head? I was told this last night, and I thought it made great sense.
Was it
win-loss? Win-loss.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Win-loss.
I thought you meant last
year. They have not got they've played really good stuff. They just haven't put 3 or 4 in a row together. Now,
the way that they did earlier in the year. Now, 4 or 5 on the road of those
split
6.
Them.
So that's you can live with that to an extent.
Totally.
But then it's coming home and feeling – you felt coming out of that Purdue game like Indiana was rounding into form. And it was like, okay, here comes Indiana. Indiana's coming up the hill.
Because you had to go through Michigan State's
stuff. And you beat Illinois. Michigan State was a totally acceptable loss.
Right.
Then it's Purdue.
Whoa, hey.
And it's like everything's in Indiana's hands. The double bye's in their hands if they win out at home. Where they've been outstanding for the last 2 months, basically since the Northwestern loss. The 4 seed, the protected seed, is firmly in their hands. It's even possible that if they win out at home, they could move up and be a 3. And if they're a 3, if you look at the bracketing principles and the way everything falls out, there's a much better chance of Columbus in the first weekend
Tell me what a protected 4 means for people. Because we're
top 4 seeds in the NCAA tournament.
Okay. Because not the Big Ten tournament.
No.
Because that's the double
bye.
That's
the double bye.
So there's
in the NCAA
things,
tournament. Yeah. The selection committee in selecting sites, locations for the first and second weekend. Sorry, I'm putting on chapstick.
Makeup.
Forgive me.
Makeup!
Chapstick is like radio makeup, basically.
Makes you look taller.
The committee tries to protect location. So the idea being there's added benefit to being a 1, 2, 3, or 4 seed.
So there's always something to play for.
Because you get to be Kansas going through Kansas City.
In Des Moines, right.
You get to be Purdue or Alabama going through Birmingham or Columbus to Louisville, you know, as an example. And therefore closer to your fan base and so on and so forth. The issue, of course, is that doesn't supersede. You're not going to take like the 4th 1 seed and drop them to be the 2nd 2 seed just so you can accommodate some geographic things for everybody. The seeding comes first to a great degree. So there comes a point where you can't accommodate it anymore and the sites fill up. And for example, like Des Moines is going to fill up fast
because of all the Big 12 teams.
Yeah. If Indiana could have gotten up to a 3, it probably could have gotten into Columbus, or at least there would have been a better chance of it, because by the time you get down to the last 3s and the 4s, it's pretty much a crapshoot whether the committee is still really able to actually give you geographic protection. Now, they may put you in Orlando instead of Sacramento.
That's better travel.
So it's better, but it's not Columbus.
It's not rewarding.
it's not Kansas fans getting to go to Des Moines. It's not IU fans getting to go to Ohio, that kind of thing. And so it felt like Indiana was sort of this rising force that had basically played like one really bad half of basketball in the previous like 3 weeks, that first half against Northwestern. Look what they just did against the team that's going to win the Big Ten. Everything was in their hands. At that point, a share of the Big Ten title was not in their hands, but still possible even.
And you get 2 games
they're going to come
home.
They're going to win out at home. They're going to, you know, do enough to impress the committee in Chicago, and maybe they can even rise up to a 3 seed. They can control their own double bye fate, all that kind of stuff. And then they don't just lose, they just sort of lay down. And it also, the other thing I would say too is, one of the things that I think we had said consistently about this team all season was that this performance was behind them. They had it at Kansas, but hey, that's Fog Allen, and you lost your senior point guard early, and that's just going to happen at Kansas sometimes. Everywhere else, even in the losses, even in the ugly losses, they had bad stretches, but they would dig in and fight back. Arizona's a good example. They fell down early. They were overmatched early, but they still dug in. They still got that back, you know, 5 points, 6 points, a handful of times.
It's interesting to see how they came back in that Arizona game, though. You remember how? They hit threes, double-digit threes.
And Northwestern is another one. They were down 19. They were down 21 at one point. They were down 19 at halftime, and they tied it on their last meaningful offensive possession of the second half. One of the things we'd given Indiana credit for was they'd stopped losing games this way.
Yeah.
They'd stopped just getting absolutely flat-track bullied out of games.
Resilient, tough, measurables.
And Iowa that are in doing that to them. Iowa, which is not as good as Kansas, obviously, or Arizona, obviously, or UCLA, obviously, but is not the worst analog when you consider that one of the big schematic weaknesses this Indiana team has had is facing teams that can score on them from three or four different spots. Not one or two. Yep. It's not you only have to manage these one or two, maybe three matchups, but no, there's four or five matchups at any given time that could be leveraged against you. Kansas, when it's Grady Dick and Jalen Wilson and, you know, Kevin McCullough is hitting shots and you've got a really, really good point guard and all that kind of stuff. Or Arizona, when they've got the two bigs, but then they've also got guys that can score from behind the three-point line. Iowa was a nice barometer of, has this team improved against that sort of team?
And the answer was a resounding no.
No.
And the other problem with that is that bugs you. And I thought the question was fair. Mike Woodson did not want any part of it in your 2 minutes and 36 seconds of press conference the other night.
I'm not even sure it was that much. Either way.
Right. The points. Trace went longer. I know that. The last four times you've played Iowa, they've gotten 80 on you every time. Is there a commonality to that? Well, Iowa runs good offense, and Indiana has a tough time stopping elite offenses. I think that's the commonality. Mike's response was, you watched the same game I did. I get all that, but at some point, we have seen bits and pieces of this. We saw Indiana struggle. If you'd have told me, and this was funny, Indiana's 2-6 against Iowa, Northwestern, and Purdue.
Yeah.
Well, Iowa has four or five guys at any time that can take you off the dribble and shoot and score. Northwestern has two senior guards that penetrate at will. And, Purdue, they have two freshman guards. So I don't want to simplify this too much, but there are issues with spreading Indiana out, attacking from multiple angles. And the funny thing was hearing Trace Jackson say, our defensive plan was a complete meltdown. He's talking about the spots he's usually on the floor. That's not happening. Now, if you're playing Caleb Banks, CJ Gunn, Jalen Hood-Schifino, and Malik Renew with Davis and that's happening, I can see it a little bit. But all those veteran guys that we praised on Saturday also had their backs to the ball when back cuts were happening and guys were getting lost in the half court. I don't know what happened. I don't know. And
maybe there
is
was
it fixable.
I maybe guess there was question. An element of letdown from Purdue, and
home if, crowd.
If you
home,
want to spin this
big arena to get back,
if you want to spin this positively for Indiana, maybe it was one last just sort of slap in the face.
Get it out of your system.
It's March. Don't do it again. But again, it just you know I don't blame fans that are skeptical. I guess is my
right.
Point.
There's too much evidence of saying why does the switch flip? If the switch can flip up as it did at Purdue, the switch shouldn't be able to flip that quickly at home. Well, it has twice in what 4 days, 96 hours. So you've seen the best of it and the worst of it, and here we are in March. When we come back, we will talk about Michigan and how that team gave Indiana some problems at the Chrysler Center before the Hoosiers dug out a late, gutty, gritty, hey, look how tough we are type of win. We've seen it before, and now Michigan's in second place. How did that happen? They're not even in the tournament. What? Yeah, that's why we do this each week with Zach Osterman. And if we get through the basketball, we might even get to finance, but we've got all summer for finance. I saw your piece on how Indiana helped out by the foundation to get through the the pandemic crisis in the athletic side of things as well. At Zach Osterman, the Indy Star, IndyStar.com. We will be back. The Crazy Horse Tavern happy hour. Heck, it's almost the weekend, folks. They're open daily at 11. Weekend brunch, 11 to 3. $3 mimosas, Bloody Marys, and screwdrivers, Hoosier hash, tenderloin Benedict, and pecan-encrusted French toast. Well, if you're hungry, the best part about brunch going to 3 o'clock is you don't have to be the first person in line either. The Crazy Horse Tavern on Kirkwood. Happy hour continues after Diane Daly's news headlines. All right, welcome back to Crazy Horse Tavern happy hour here on the first Thursday of March. March Madness is in the house. Zach Osterman is in the house. The weather has cooperated the first 2 days here of meteorological spring. Tomorrow it will not. It will start raining just after midnight, and it will rain and rain and rain for about the next 18 hours. 1 to 2 inches. We also have a wind advisory starting tomorrow as well. So if it's windy and rainy, please be aware of that no matter where you're going to be tomorrow, whether it's going to school, work, or playing a little hooky, whichever it is. Or if you're traveling with your favorite high school basketball team, Joe Smith and Terry Stoltz will leave us. Joe will leave us just after 3:45 tomorrow. So we'll go early with Joe. So tune in. We know Joe is usually 3:40s for his reports. He's always with me for the 3 o'clock hour on Fridays. But they're going to have to leave earlier tomorrow. Sectional basketball, 13, Class 4A, South and Center Grove. The Trojans host. They are 21-2. South has, 16 wins this season? J.R. Holmes has just a little bit of experience. Boy, that's going to be a tasty one. Chalk Talk with the Hall of Famers begins at 5:30. We'll tip it right at 6. In Game 2, Bloomington North and Martinsville. North took care of the Arties by 11 earlier in the season at the Tom McKitty Court at the Cougar Den. 20 minutes after game number 1 ends, we will have game number 2 after a quick Chalk Talk with Jason Spear and Joe Smith. Terry Stoltz and Black Lumber bring you that game as well, and we thank T. We'll get back with T next week. We'll have a full recap of a very busy, hopefully, 3 nights in Center Grove. The winners meet on Saturday, Chalk Talk at 7, the tips at 7:30. This would be the third consecutive year the city schools meet. We just need one of them to bring you that broadcast on Saturday night. Pacers tonight, 8 o'clock for 8:30. San Antonio's 16-game losing streak ended earlier in the week, so now they've lost 16 of 17. Mark Boyle's pregame starts at 8. We'll see if – I told you I'd look at do you have DePirex Twitter up anywhere? See if Halliburton's playing, will you? He had a calf deal yesterday.
I'll check it.
Compliments of Kevin Wilson, a calf deal. That's the high tech.
And as we're talking about the Pacers,
go ahead.
A loss this week, David Benner.
Oh, yeah, I mentioned that yesterday. Yeah. Awful. 67, cancer. Yeah. Again, he was at the Star before the Pacers. Everybody forgets that.
The Benners were. Unless Bill was there for a long time. Yeah. I mean,
that's who I was reading growing up.
Indie institutions in a lot of ways.
Right.
David, I know a lot of people have written eloquently. I know Greg Doyle did about David. He could be closed off. I had a lot less experience with him. I always thought he enjoyed working with me because I was only ever there to write the floweriest, easiest sidebar possible. And so he knew he could play me, and I didn't care. I was happy to be played because I was just there to – I didn't need time with the Simon family. I wasn't going to ask any tough questions from the GM. I was just like, sure, that sounds good. And he had a really dry sense of humor. I don't want to act like I knew him as well as other people did. Mike Wells also had a wonderful tribute to him yesterday. So did James Boyd, who was our Pacers writer before going to The Athletic. He will be missed. It was always fun to see him around.
Yeah, that's who I read growing
Conseco,
up with the
Star. Banker's Life, Gainbridge, whatever we're going to call it.
Dustin DePirak says, wouldn't bet against him being available, but still of note. Again, a little tightness. Not strain, tightness. There you have it. You hope you wouldn't need him for San Antonio, but any loss the Pacers have now is fine. They're playing such good basketball. The future is bright. It doesn't have to be right now. Add another player like Mathurin. That would be good. John Rahm. All he does is win golf tournaments. Well, he has a 2-shot lead. Round 1 of the Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill. Chris Kirk, last week's winner, is tied for second along with Kurt Kitayama and Cameron Young. Invitational designated field, only the big players, $20 million on the line. You can watch that wind blow tomorrow. Osterman's here to talk about hoops. Michigan's in town, and now everything is reset. Last night, Maryland and Northwestern, both the teams in, well, a couple of the teams in front of Indiana. Michigan is still one of those teams. They went out last night, and they both laid an egg. Maryland did so on the Schottenstein Center court at Ohio State. Penn State hit a late three to knock off Northwestern at home in front of a big rowdy house for Chicago's Big Ten team. And now Michigan is on the road tonight against Illinois, who has some issues as well. But it's senior day or whatever, last home game. It's all weird this time of year. And like you mentioned earlier in our last segment, yeah, let's just get to the tournament and get playing. Well, Michigan's second in the Big Ten. They're not even in the tournament yet. They're on the fringes. So you want to talk about crazy goings-on? Well, scouting reports tonight. We'll start watching. That game is what, 7 o'clock ESPN, I would think. I will check right now. But Indiana, Michigan have played relatively, what was that, just a couple of weeks ago. Familiarity breeds contempt. Well, Indiana played Iowa once. They got 91 on them at Iowa City and got 90 on them here, and that was almost 2 months apart. What matters on Sunday?
I think there's a handful of things. I think, Michigan is a – Michigan is a team that at full strength –
which they haven't been.
No, and that's why I use that qualifier. At full strength, Kobe Bufkin is the sort of player Indiana has struggled to defend. Jet Howard is too. You saw those two players, I think, combined for maybe, was it 19 or 23 points in the first half of that game up in Ann Arbor, and then only three in the second. Howard was injured. Bufkin didn't score in the second half. Michigan is a team that has a player that at least in theory can sort of cancel out a lot of what Trace Jackson Davis is doing. So you can't just sort of say, oh, well, we're gonna outscore you by 25 in the paint tonight. Good luck beating that. On the other hand, Michigan has not been consistent at all this year. They've been a little bit better lately, but it's not like they've won six in a row or anything like that.
They did win at Wisconsin on the weekend.
And they beat Michigan State at home in a tough game. Again, it was at home. It wasn't in East Lansing, but it was right after everything that happened in East Lansing. It was a weird environment.
Did Jet Howard play in that one?
I don't know that.
He did not play against Wisconsin on Saturday.
And I think the update on him for Illinois tonight, I believe this is for tonight. It is. This was posted 7 minutes ago. And it's a tweet
fresh
that says,
out of the oven.
Jet Howard. It's a tweet from earlier this morning that says, Jet Howard is to be determined for Illinois. He's progressing. This is from Sadie Washington, one of their assistant coaches. Quote, he's progressing. He's been working really hard through his rehab. He has had a great attitude throughout and his great support and his brothers in his absence. If and when he gets back, we're going to be happy to have him. Obviously, if and when he gets back, if we're parsing statements, it doesn't sound great.
He wanted to play on Saturday. Dad said no.
Yeah.
And that's a different element that throws in there, too. Dad said no.
So, again, the piecing it all together here, at full strength, Michigan is a team that can leverage some mismatches on Indiana. We saw that up there. On the other hand, Indiana didn't play particularly well in that game, particularly offensively. It's not like they hit a flurry of shots. You know, you had Trace Jackson Davis and Jalen Huchefino carry you, but those two guys needed some pretty high usage to get there, and Michigan still couldn't win that game because I think there are ways that Indiana gives Michigan trouble. Indiana's got much bigger defenders than Michigan's guards, not counting Kobe Bufkin. Michigan's not very deep at all. I don't think, Terrace Reed has been a bit of a difference maker for them because he comes in off the bench. He can, he can give you that post presence when Dickinson wants to play away from the rim. He's incredibly energetic. The problem you have if you're Michigan is that's not really an advantage against Indiana because Indiana already plays two big lineups. And Race Thompson is not that impressed by an energetic freshman. He's got one of those. He sees him every day in practice. So it's and then Indiana can also throw Malik Renu out there and they can give Jordan Geronimo some minutes and all those kinds of things. So there are some ways that I think Michigan can hurt Indiana if Jet Howard's playing. If Jet Howard's effective, because he was playing and he was effective for a while in that Indiana game, then he came down weird on the injured ankle and suddenly he wasn't effective anymore.
Here's what happened on Saturday. Bufkin had 28, Dickinson had 23, and Doug McDaniel had 20. They played 42, 41, and 43 minutes, and Baker played 36. Terrence Williams played 29. Shedder 11, and Reed 17. So it's all big. It's not guard replacements. It's all big guy replacements.
Yeah.
Shedder's not small. Reed's not small. And Williams isn't small. Mm-mm. Those are all big guys. So they're going to have the bodies to throw at Indiana's front court.
And
right?
But on the other hand, what has given Indiana the most trouble? It's been teams drive that can go slash. Smaller, yeah. drive and kick, drive and slash, drive and finish, drive and shoot. Bufkin can do that to Indiana. Howard, at least in theory, can, but you would have to imagine even if he plays, physically he's going to be a little bit limited in like how quick's his first step, what kind of explosion does he have.
Oh, what is that in my ear? Oh, my gosh. Yes, yes. I'm going to ask Osterman about Xavier Johnson. Relax. Relax. That's a big, well, it's a big deal
it
because
is.
That can cancel out a limited guard rotation of Michigan.
And if you start putting – if you get Xavier Johnson who warmed up, didn't play – there's all sorts of rumors. He was warming up to try and force his. He wanted to play. The staff said no. You know, there's. I mean, we can parse all the Twitter rumors we want.
He was
to.
Awfully sweaty. It looked like.
Yeah, he was.
He was fired up.
He was trying. I think he was trying.
He was auditioning.
He was trying to convince somebody at least that he was capable. And if there was absolutely no intention to play him again this season, I don't think Indiana would let him dress.
It's false to him. It's false to everybody else that watches. Right. It's a lot easier to say, hey,
but you know. And there have been – Mike Woodson's done this a handful of times. I think he did it a couple times maybe with Jordan Geronimo last year where Geronimo was coming off an injury. He dressed. He didn't play. But then, like, the next game, he dressed and he played.
Those are the clues we're looking for.
We'll see. But you're right. Doug McDaniel is a small freshman point guard. And if you start smothering him with Xavier Johnson and you let Trey Galloway go guard Kobe Bufkin more consistently – then suddenly it's, well, now it's all on Jet Howard to score 28 points on a bad ankle on the road at Assembly Hall on Senior Day.
And a bad ankle means we can put different guys on him. We don't have to have an elite guy on him. That's the other – he's not at 100%. The one thing that's interesting about if Xavier Johnson does come back, Mike has been asked this 1,000 times, and his answer is fine. Of course we're going to find a way for him to get back into the lineup. But what I think it does, it bumps everybody down a notch in a good way, where Trey Galloway doesn't have to worry about, in his 35 minutes, how many fouls he has because he knows he's the second ball handler. When Trey Galloway would come off the bench, he would play just red line for 7 minutes, and he would drive everybody crazy. Teammates, fans, the other team, but that hasn't been brought out of him recently because of his roles changed.
Mm.
He can't go that hard knowing that he's going to play 35 minutes a night, and he can't get in foul trouble because he's the second ball handler. Knocking him back the pecking order to bring his old stuff back, and Xavier Johnson, Indiana almost gains a player and a half on the defensive side.
I mean, yeah, that's the best-case scenario. Obviously,
right.
the worst-case scenario is there's growing pains fitting a player like that back in. You only have one more regular season game, and then from there on, everything is a win-or-go-home situation. And it's also from Xavier Johnson's perspective, you know, if he gets to play Michigan, well, the next game he plays, he has to play the day after that if they win. There's no, we'll play him tonight on a minutes restriction, and then we'll see how he feels tomorrow, and he'll get some therapy and some rehab and some treatment, and after two more days, he'll be ready to practice again, and then we can ramp him up a little bit more. If, let's say, he plays against Michigan, let's say he is on a minutes restriction of some kind, plays no more than 20 minutes, then he goes to the tournament, and suddenly it's, well, if we win today, you're playing tomorrow. And if we win tomorrow, you're playing the next day.
Now, if they have the double bye, that will only be three in a row.
You'll get the extra day for him to get a little bit more underneath him. And this also goes back to, I think I said this last week, and you know, the nature of the Iowa defeat may have changed Mike Woodson's mind in one or two cases. But normally around this time of year, most of your guys aren't doing a lot in practice. In terms of physical stuff, in terms of the let's beat each other up,
why did he
let's
them
run
all,
a ton, all that kind of stuff.
Which is interesting you bring that up because he let a lot of guys out there to dangle in a game that wasn't going to be won. That was interesting.
It was, and on the other hand, it is worth saying, like, his first sub off the bench in the second half was Caleb Banks. So, you know, it's the
but Jackson could, Davis still played 35 minutes.
Yeah. I mean,
if you're going to rest him, you're down 26. That's 13 consecutive twos they have to make and 13 consecutive stops. Let's not get crazy. We're not making any threes.
Yeah.
So I thought
and that's
that
an issue, too. I mean, what did they get outscored by?
33? They made 13. And how many did Indiana make? 2? 39 to 6, something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was 33 points.
Yeah, so 39-6 is 33.
Right. So you're
yeah.
losing the rebound battle, which is the effort battle.
Yeah.
You're losing the three-point battle, which is the scheme battle. And, I mean, this is one area where I don't think it's going to change, but I think if Indiana winds up falling short of something meaningful this season, one of the things I think we're going to look back on and question with this team is why couldn't it find its way to shooting more threes? Because it has been consistent at them when it's hit them most nights. But you hear a head coach who, whether he believes this or whether this is just him trying to protect his team for the way that it's built or the way it's trying to score or whatever, is saying things like twos are as good as threes and that kind of stuff. Like, that's just not practical. It's not even modern basketball. It's not practical. Now, a big part of the problem Indiana has is its two highest usage players by some distance are players that don't shoot a lot of threes. Trayce Jackson-Davis doesn't shoot any. Jalen Hood-Schifino goes on runs where he can hit a bunch of threes, but typically he looks for more of his offense, basically 15, 16 feet and in, which is fine, except then basically you have once you take those two guys away and you want them to get their shots because you see what they're capable of, you see what Jackson Davis has done virtually night in, night out this season, you see what Hood-Schifino's done in some big games, even in some losses, you want them to get their shots and find their comfort level and really be hurting the other team. But that means you have basically no spare possessions once those are all used to say, oh, well, let's just take a few extra threes because so many of them are going to two guys that don't shoot.
And that's why I think the Xavier Johnson piece is important. And I know we've spoken about this, but the reiteration is just for Michigan's sake, it's the same sharks in the water like you saw against Braden Smith and Fletcher Lawyer. It's a freshman. It is different. And if you can get them to start chucking the ball all over the place, all of a sudden Galloway's playing free safety as opposed to on-the-ball defender. Indiana can get more easy baskets than grinding out a half-court offense. That's the other part. This team has not created a ton of turnovers. And I think it's because of Xavier Johnson not hounding that point guard and letting everybody else kind of settle into where they need to find. So I think that could help their offense a little bit. What's better than a transition three when you've got everybody else running down the court to grab the clang off the long rebound? I mean, those are things that can help create shots as opposed to a half-court system that we know if the double-team ball movement isn't perfect, Indiana has struggled to find those threes. And I think Iowa had an interesting plan as well defensively where they're like, hey, man, we're all 6'5", 6'6", 2. We can go and get a hand up. And if they're going to beat us, well, we don't care if we get beat. We never have. Well, why is that going to change anything? So the better shots you find, great. But the reaction from Indiana, I think, is way more important than the final score on Sunday, because if it is a two-game losing streak and now you're the sixth seed, now it just kind of smells like yesterday's fish.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. And I think this is the first time you've taken this kind of punch in a game like this. It's okay when it happens at Kansas. Like, you can – Trayce Jackson-Davis wasn't healthy. Xavier Johnson got hurt. That was Jalen Hood-Schifino's first game back from the back thing, if I'm not mistaken. So, like, Indiana was clearly not 100%.
Discombobulated.
And then they were in this, you know, this environment they couldn't handle, and there were some mismatches they struggled with. You're supposed to be past that by this point. And Iowa is – like diet Kansas on its best day. Yep. You shouldn't have struggled Kansas-like. That much. At very least, you should have been able to find a way. I'm not saying to score 92 points, but to not be in a situation where Iowa's tearing them off in chunks and you can't find some offensive rhythm yourself.
Against
Iowa,
a bad defensive team.
Bad on the road. They've shot bad. They defended bad. They've played bad. They have been a bad road team all year. And for them to do that to you, I understand anybody who thinks, nope, now you've got to prove it to me all over.
How can Iowa get credit for their momentum win against Michigan State being down 13 with 90 seconds and doing that, but Indiana took all their momentum on the road? Iowa's at home doing that. So this is why this is so confounding. And you and I have watched enough basketball to know, like, well, we everything happens for reasons or not
maybe,
reasons.
Maybe it is an outlier. Maybe it really is just – like that is distinctly possible. If you sat here and told me right now I can gaze into the future and Indiana will be playing in the Elite Eight, like, I wouldn't be stunned. There are ways in which Indiana can go that way. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like,
yes.
Indiana, as much as we talk about, well, this matchup gives Indiana trouble and this matchup gives Indiana trouble and on and on. Well, imagine the trouble Indiana as a matchup gives teams that can't defend the ball very well or teams that don't have adequate post defense. And especially imagine that on a two-day turnaround in the first weekend of the NCAA tournament.
Now you're talking about luck of draws and things like that.
And that's where I come back to what we said at the top of the show, which is it has felt like this season has been more so than normal. This has been the sort of season where we have this large collection of teams that are going to be seeded somewhere from like basically maybe the middle end of the two line down to like six or seven that you say, I could see them making a run. It's going to come down to matchups and luck. And just in a little bit of fortune, but I could see it happen.
Good news is you're going to have the best player on the floor most of those nights.
Yeah.
And that makes a huge difference.
And
the
possibly
tournament
the
slows
better,
down, possessions shrink.
Possibly the better forward and the better guard most nights.
Well, those are your words. I'll let you ride those out. You know more about it than not most. Zach Osterman, 4:30 Sunday, senior day. Trace Jackson Davis is not coming back, folks. He's already told you that multiple times this year, so he will go through that, and you'll hear the reasons why. He said, well, I'm not going to talk about it until senior day. I don't blame him. We'll talk to Osterman next week from wherever he is, Chicago, and we'll have Joe Smith. Big show Friday tomorrow. Remember, Joe's early tomorrow. We'll get it started right after 3:05. Have a great Thursday night. The Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour is over. David Hayes is next.